P-43. Stevenson Farm, Eastview, Colorado. Dan was first to step into Phil Norris's newly unveiled underground prepper stash, which was vaster than any of them could have foreseen, given their expectations of the home's structural limitations. Where the unconcealed area of the basement had lacked pretty much anything noteworthy, this room, if indeed room was the right word when others ranging from bunker to cornucopia came so easily to mind, was its polar opposite. Quite literally, Dan McCarthy found it difficult to decide where to look first. He was so overwhelmed by the sight of so many neatly and densely packed rows of shelves, his feet didn't even move, and his uncertainty of where to look first truly was an uncertainty over where to even direct his eyes. The shelves looked somewhere between those more typically seen in modern supermarkets and those that had been a constant and memorable fixture in the pile-em-high toy stores of Dan's youth. To no small degree, this was because of the content of the shelves, which on one side of the central walkway were utterly jam-packed with long-life foodstuff in enormous cans, sachets and various other kinds of containers, and on the other were more haphazardly filled by irregularly shaped items of which working boots and thick ropes were some of the first Dan consciously caught sight of. The vast shelving units were two deep on each side, with a row of four beds lined up nearest the wall on each side. The bunker had no windows and no evident route to the outside world other than the stairway that led to the rest of the house, so it didn't really matter where the beds were positioned relative to everything else. Dan couldn't shake the feeling that they had been belatedly introduced in place of extra rows of shelving, however, given just how tightly packed the shelves were, and that the beds were, after all, arranged in similar lines. There appeared to be room for eight. "Aw, look," Tara exclaimed, pointing directly ahead to a wide whiteboard at the end of the walkway. It didn't take long to reach it, perhaps only 15 keen paces, and she was so taken by the writing on it that she didn't pay much heed to any of the items she passed on the way.
"He added me after making the original plans."
The others followed her lead, admittedly with a less total focus on the board, but when they reached close enough to comfortably read it, they all realized she was right and understood exactly what the scrawled writing and hand-drawn charts represented. Evidently, Phil had amassed a store intended to not only sustain him through some kind of year-long emergency scenario, but also to sustain his closest friends and family. The initial list contained five names, each on its own line: Henry, Bird, Dan, Clark, Emma. Tara's name had been added in a slightly narrower row at the bottom of the board, while Piper's had been written in small writing next to Emma's. More than a little heartwarmingly, and in a manner that brought strong emotions flooding into three of the four adults reading the board, each row contained notes on what kind of non-essential items Phil thought would make life in the bunker easier for each of his chosen protectees. Henry's row, for instance, included scribbled notes about spare parts for his wheelchair, while Tara's added row mentioned magazines, cosmetics, and wine. She didn't feel at all offended that these were among the things Phil most thought she couldn't live without, partly because he wasn't exactly wrong, but largely because of the fact that his multiple notes had visibly been written at different times. The penmanship and varying clarity made this clear, and it really showed that he had been thinking about this all for a while and truly was trying to do whatever he could to make his friends' lives as pleasant as possible if his emergency bunker had ever proven necessary. Dan read everything in his own row, glad that Phil had planned to provide him with a stash of sci-fi books as well as some puzzles and plenty of pens and paper. Emma's row, meanwhile, contained the fewest ideas, with one large circled note relating that Phil was considering outright asking her and bringing her in on the planning stages. "Most rational, pragmatic, could assist with list making," read one point in this circle. "But don't frighten unnecessarily," added another. The single direct suggestion, which like those in Dan and Tara's rows was accompanied by a tick to show that Phil had procured the items in question, was composed of a single word: earplugs.
see, he knew you would all drive me demented.
Emma laughed, doing so through a warm glow of feelings over how much effort Phil had put into everything. At the far right end of Emma's row, Phil had begun a new bullet point list of baby supplies for Piper, including the obvious things like a progressively sized stash of diapers and plenty of formula. He had made another note stating, "Toys for higher ages, very smart," and 3 exclamation marks had been added after he'd had that initial idea. "There's all the diapers and stuff," Chip pointed out, directing everyone to the top row of one of the shelving units. "He already got it all, since she was born, I guess."
"I wonder where my wine is," Tara joked. "He did tick it off."
Everyone laughed. For a few minutes, they wandered around, feeling no sense of intrusion given that Phil had left the key in Chip's care to be used by the McCarthys in exactly this scenario of his own death having occurred. No one touched anything, seemingly agreeing without having to explicitly discuss it that this was a respectful course of action, at least until the others had been inside. "Hold the show," Dan said, instantly catching everyone's attention with the seriousness of his tone. "He has a shelf of stuff he found lying around when he first moved in. Guys, he has a shelf of Walker's stuff." No sooner had these words left Dan's mouth than Emma was standing at his side and crouching to the ground to run her eyes along the bottom shelf, which was, indeed, adorned with a stuck-on sheet of paper reading, "Walker's Stuff." Phil hadn't left anything to chance, very obviously having wanted the others to see these items and to know whose they were before examining them.
"Holy moly macaroni," Tara chimed in, arriving a few seconds later. "There could be anything in here."
"Wait, though," Chip said, as a relative outsider, feeling like he had a different and somewhat detached perspective, despite his own recent closeness with Phil. He hadn't been around the group in the days of their dealings with the late Richard Walker, for one thing, and had only recently learned that the famous old political warhorse had owned the farmhouse before Phil. If Phil had found anything he thought was worth telling you guys about, well, wouldn't he have told you guys about that thing? This just looks like random old stuff. I mean, look, those are just newspapers and not even particularly old ones that could be from certain important dates or whatever. I think he just didn't want to throw this stuff out, so he kind of hoarded it. "This isn't a hoarder's nest," Dan said, feeling the need to state this even though it didn't feel like defending Phil, since Chip was by no means attacking or even criticizing him. "But yeah, I do get what you mean about how he would have told us if there was anything among this stuff that could end up being important in some way. It's literally just what it says it is, Walker's stuff. I mean, I guess it's possible there's something important that Phil didn't realize was..." Dan trailed off, a knowing grin crossing his face as something in particular caught his eye. "Like this old box," he chuckled. "Emma, look, it's the box Ben brought to our house that night when he told us about the hoax. Man, you couldn't make it up." Emma raised her eyebrows.
"Oh yeah, we brought this back to Walker after we went to Lolo, with almost everything taken out. That feels like another lifetime ago, doesn't it?"
"This had everything in it," Dan said, nodding passively at Emma's final point while he lifted the box from its spot, evidently considering it differently to the rest of Phil's stash, which they'd all tacitly agreed to leave in place for now. "It had the blank plaques. It had photos of Walker and Closter back when they were working on the breadcrumbs they laid so their hoax would look like a secret from every single angle. It had everything." "So what happened to all that stuff?" Chip asked. "The other fake letter and everything?"
"We destroyed it," Emma replied on Dan's behalf, very perfunctorily. "At that point, the hoax couldn't get out. Dan had backups of everything on the computer in his basement, which Phil helped to secure and which basically inspired this one. But we got rid of all the paper stuff. Obviously, Phil had no idea what this box was, or he wouldn't have filled it with, well, all this cutlery and these egg cups and this other random kitchen stuff."
Dan could only chuckle at the irony. "The contents of this box would have turned the world on its head if they'd leaked out at the wrong time. And now it's full of this. Dan, just before you put it back," Chip said, placing his hand on top of Dan's. This is pretty obvious, but you guys did know this box has a false bottom, right? What? Dan and Emma replied in unison. They shared a shocked glance before looking back at the box, which Dan quickly laid on the ground and began emptying handfuls at a time with his wife's equally focused assistance. Dan knocked on the base of the box. Are you sure? He asked, looking up at Chip. It looks like it. The clue's on the outside. Look, there's a kind of line where it's hollow before the actual base. Maybe only half an inch, but I've seen that kind of thing before. The whole idea is that it doesn't look like there's a false bottom. But when you grow up with an old man like mine, you learn to spot these things, you know? Phil being Phil, I feel like he might have noticed if he'd taken a real close look at it. But then why would he look closely if he didn't expect anything? Chicken and egg. Chicken and egg wasn't exactly an apt analogy, as the others all thought in momentary confusion when the words left his lips, but they all more or less got what Chip was getting at. There could be a few extra sheets of paper or something, Chip went on. I want to find out, but you know, I don't want to take over. So do one of you guys want to try and price it open? Emma tipped her head in encouragement for Dan to go for it.
Don't be gentle, she said. Just be quick. Maybe we should tell Clark about this first, Tara suggested. Clark said not to bother him unless we needed something, and this isn't needing something, Emma countered. Dan, try to open it.
Agreeing with the sentiment, Dan did as she suggested. On his second try, much firmer than the first, he applied enough pressure to one side of the false bottom to cause a popping up reaction at the other. He lifted the base and felt a flash of disappointment at seeing no paper underneath. The speculative prediction of hidden documents Chip had offered, along with his astute observation of the false bottom, it seemed, hadn't proven correct. But when Dan fully lifted out the base, his mouth fell open. Only Emma was close enough to see, with Chip keeping a respectful distance and Tara standing with Piper, and she reacted similarly. It's a flash drive, Dan said, turning first to Tara. Can anyone see a computer? Right by the whiteboard, Chip said. There's a laptop on the little desk and it's plugged in. Even if the laptop is password protected, we can sign in as a guest or even boot it up in safe mode if we have to. I'm telling myself that a password on the drive itself would kind of defeat the point of leaving it, because I want to see what's on that thing more than I've wanted anything in a long time. Emma took hold of the flash drive, and for a brief moment, Dan felt a baseless and fleeting fear that she might intentionally damage it. This didn't make sense in his mind, but like any fear, it didn't have to do so to take root, and so he was doubly glad to see Emma walking purposefully towards the laptop. Within less than a minute, she had signed in as a guest and inserted the flash drive. With no request for a password, a folder popped up on the screen containing just one file. It was a video entitled Dead.mp4.
Clark should see this, Tara insisted, feeling increasingly strongly that he really should, not through any bias or favorable consideration via his position as her boyfriend, but because he was at least as entitled as anyone else.
And he will, Emma said. But it's like we talked about, time sensitivity. Godfrey will see this too, and Leisha if he wants to. Clark would want us to watch this now. Godfrey would want us to watch this now. And I'm sure Henry would want us to watch this now, too.
Tara turned to Dan. Remember that whole idea of multitasking, Tara? He agreed. Since we don't know what we're going to have to do next or what news Godfrey and Leisha are going to come back from Birchwood with, everything is up in the air. Before Leisha hopefully gets Billy back from Sanctuary, we're supposed to have that big focus 2020 showdown with Slater and Cole. And Geller, he grunted, almost choking on the third name. So there's no sense in wasting time waiting around, right? Emma nodded decisively, then double-clicked on the video file without missing another breath. Right on cue, Richard Walker's face filled the screen. He looked a few years younger, far less stressed, and in general much more like himself than they all remembered from the very end. And the backdrop was that of his office in the former IDA building in nearby Colorado Springs, which now served as Timo's Fiori Frontieri HQ. Upon the sight of Walker in this setting, a feeling of almost overwhelming anticipation hit Dan McCarthy like a rushing wave. What was he about to see? What was he about to hear? The only occasion he could really liken this to was when he sat at his own computer and read the entirety of the infamous Closter letter, back when he believed it to be true, and had just finished painstakingly translating it from the original handwritten German. Back then, Dan, and ultimately the whole world, had learned a whole lot of illuminating background all at once from the contents of the letter. That had turned out to be a series of masterfully crafted lies, of course, with the irony not lost on Dan that the very box in which Chip's eye for the hustle had just found the flash drive had been the same one that had once contained various alternate drafts of that very letter. It was utterly bizarre watching Walker from beyond the grave, his strong and healthy self from the days of the leak when he had been the antagonist in Dan's life. In these days of Coles and Gellers stooping lower by the hour, Dan couldn't help but look back and wonder how things would have played out if Walker had still been around when open contact was established with the messengers. "Hello, Ben," Walker began, his resonant and authoritative politician's voice instantly taking Dan back to the time he had wandered unconsciously out to the cornfield several years earlier, and Walker had intercepted him for questioning. In turn, that took Dan back to his first meeting with the imposing figure during a school visit to the IDA many moons ago. Dan felt like a child once more, awed by Walker's presence even from beyond the grave, and finding his eyes unshakably drawn yet again to the famous and well-earned scar that made the old man's face so recognizable. "Or if he's dead too," Walker continued with a glint in his eyes. "Hello, Dan,"